today. Is it safe for children to return to school? This week, millions of children in England and Wales returned to school, following those in Scotland and Northern Ireland, as well as in many other parts of the world. In a year of national lockdowns, where many of us were virtually confined to our homes, the idea of children mixing together in classrooms and playgrounds is understandably nerve-wracking. But what are the risks, and do the benefits outweigh them? From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, what does science tell us about COVID-19 and children? Robin McKee is science editor at The Observer. Robin, how often do children get the coronavirus?
Children under 11, 10 under 11, very, very rarely display symptoms of COVID. I'm being very careful what I say there. They don't display it. It could well be that they have it, but they're more or less asymptomatic. It's very rare under 10-year-olds, much more prevalent amongst teenagers.
And how much more prevalent is it among teenagers?
But basically, teenagers are much like adults. So it's as prevalent as it is amongst adults. And that just depends where you are in the country.
I mean, that divide feels quite important to me, and we will come back to it. But before we do, let's just talk about when children do become infected. How sick do they get?
In cases of primary school children, they don't seem to get sick at all.
But the scientific evidence shows that few children are likely to become ill from coronavirus.
Hardly any show any symptoms, with one critical exception. It's a thing called multisystem inflammatory syndrome, and that causes 3 or 4 weeks, perhaps slightly longer, after infection, they suffer major organ failure.
3-year-old Marley Grix is finally home after 10 days in hospital. Marley had many symptoms, including a high temperature, a rash and a swollen neck, as well as bright red hands and feet.
It's very serious. It's very rare. There has been roughly 1,000 cases reported in the world so far. There have been 25 million cases of COVID. So that puts that in context. It is very, very rare. It is very serious, however, if you get it. Apart from that, it's hard to tell when how many gets it, because they just really don't show it.
Is that what people talk about when they talk about a Kawasaki-like syndrome?
It is. It is not the same as that syndrome. It is a unique disease of its own standing that has arrived with COVID.
Can it be fatal?
They can die, yes.
Do we know yet why the virus has such a different effect on children than it does on adults?
It's a puzzle, but there is at least one good theory for it. There is a thing called the ACE2 receptor, and that lies on the surfaces of our cells, and it's this receptor is the keyhole that the virus uses to get in inside cells. And the crucial point about that is the older you get, the more ACE2 receptors you have. So that means when you're very young, you have very low concentrations of ACE2 receptor in your cells, in your throat and in your lungs. And it makes it more difficult for the virus to get into your cells. And so the young people are protected. The older you get, the more concentrations of ACE2 receptors you have, and the much more likely impact of that is you will become infected.
Gosh, I'd never heard of that. How does the ACE2 receptor work as a key?
Your cells are covered with receptors, and the various proteins lock onto them and switch your cells on, make them divide, make them exude something. And the ACE2 receptor is very important in blood pressure. I take blood pressure tablets that affect my ACE2 receptors. And the older you get, the more you have. And the key point about the SARS virus is that they trick that receptor. They pretend to be that little lock that switches into the keyhole and switches on, and then they get inside the cell, and then more copies of that virus are made. The cell eventually bursts and the virus is spread. And that's how the disease spreads through people. And adults, if there are more ACE2 receptors, are more likely to be victims of that. That's the hypothesis. Again, we've only known about this disease for 6 months, so it's a learning curve.
Is that a different process than for other diseases?
Yes. Other diseases hijack different receptors, but that's how viruses take effect. They use different receptors on cells and then invade the cell, take them over, kill them, and makes more copies of the virus, then spread to other cells. This ACE2 receptor is unique to COVID. It's very important to it.
You've talked about children not displaying the symptoms of COVID.
Yes.
Has the research told us whether children are simply not getting COVID or they are getting infected, but they're only not showing symptoms?
They certainly get infected, but they show no symptoms. That's the vast majority of cases.
Okay, so as you've told us, kids get much less ill than adults with COVID, but millions of them have either already returned to school or are about to across the UK.
We've already seen over 1.6 million children going back to school safely, not just safely for them, but also safely for those who work in schools. It's the right time for all children to come back.
So the next question is obviously about the spread of the disease. We know schools are taking steps to limit the risk, asking parents to wear masks and children over 12 in some areas, keeping kids within set bubbles. But clearly, there will be a lot of mixing. And kids tend to spread disease, don't they?
Yes, children do tend to spread diseases. Flu is an example, colds another one. COVID appears to be the exception. They don't, when they're young, seem to spread the disease in anything like the way that adults do. So it's slightly counterintuitive. Part of that is, well, that's still being investigated. We're not entirely sure why that is happening.
Do we have any theories?
Yes. I mean, one simple theory is that children have smaller, less powerful lungs than adults, stands to reason. And SARS and COVID are being spread primarily by coughs. And so they just don't have the energy of the projectile droplets that are coming from their breath when they cough. Just doesn't get as far. And so they're going to infect fewer people that way. Simple logic.
I mean, you say it very confidently, and I'm just interested in one thing. The last time we spoke, you pointed out that science around COVID is basically in its infancy.
Yes.
And presumably that's the same in this area. How sure are we about these things?
That's a very good question. We're not sure at all. These are all ideas to put forward to try and explain the observations that it seems to be that children under 11, 12 just don't spread the disease as much as older people.
And how do scientists tell that? How does the research work?
It's very, very tricky to do in the case of young children because you can't experiment on young children. So that means a very difficult one to do. All you can do is hypothesise and look at the rates of infection among young children as opposed to older children, teenagers and adults. And you notice this effect.
And so we come back to that point that you started with, that this might be true for young children, but not teenagers. And schools are not only primary schools, they are secondary schools. So what do we know about teenagers?
They don't get sick the way that adults do, but they will pass it on far more easily than younger children. Then, apart from the syndrome that I mentioned earlier on, they're relatively at little risk. People under 19, it's by and large, very, very few complications arise. The danger is really for the teachers and for the elderly teachers and for all the other adults working in the school. They're the ones that are more at risk than the children.
Hence the debate around face masks in classrooms.
Indeed.
Boris Johnson has defended the government's change in position on the use of face coverings in secondary schools in England. Pupils will now have to wear masks between lessons in schools in areas where there are local lockdowns. Elsewhere in England, it will be up to head teachers to decide. In Scotland and Northern Ireland, face coverings have to be worn in all secondary schools, in communal areas and corridors in secondary schools. And in Wales, those aged over 11 are recommended to wear them in places where they can't socially distance.
Face masks is a very controversial issue. In some ways, people argue that it distracts people, think they're safe when they're not safe. On the other hand, anything that limits the spread of the virus must be seen as having some good value to it.
It sounds less worrying for primary schools, but to be honest, a bit scary in these huge secondary schools. I guess one difference is that younger children clearly cannot remain socially distant from each other, and schools aren't even going to try to make them, while teenagers will be more able to take precautions around hygiene and around staying away from each other. There's also a debate around face masks. In Scotland and Northern Ireland, they will have to be worn by teenagers in communal areas, although only in parts of England. And in other schools in England and in Wales, it will be up to the school. But I guess one question I want to ask is about the adults themselves in school. How important is it for them to maintain precautions in areas where they mix together, like, for example, the staff room?
Yes, I think they have to be particularly careful there, not let their guard down, as it were, and treat themselves and their colleagues with the same rigour that they treat their children in keeping up the social distancing and masks. I think that's incredibly important. They are more at risk than the children. This is an opportunistic virus, and we have to be very careful about it, and they have a particular duty of care to be on top of it.
Okay, so there's some reassuring news, but still clearly some risk. Do we know yet from other countries that have already reopened their schools how things have gone?
Well, they've only just started. There was one outbreak in Scotland a week ago.
One of those questions is what to do if there's an outbreak of the virus, like the one that's forced this school in Dundee to close less than 2 weeks after reopening. 21 teachers and two pupils have tested positive for COVID-19. The First Minister
and that's
confirmed
27 cases at one school, King's Park School in Dundee. The interesting thing is there that only two pupils were affected, whereas the rest were made up of adult staff, which speaks to the risk facing adults and the need to be very, very careful and keep social distancing when you're teaching these kids. Yeah, but previously, of course, there have been other outbreaks. I mean, there was one in Israel in May.
As we know, schools across Israel are reopening. There's been a high school in Jerusalem, which has really turned into a hotspot. Tell me, what is the municipality there doing to try and bring this under control?
And a lot of people became infected, but that was during a heat wave. People weren't social distancing then, they weren't wearing masks. The heat wave is important because they closed all the windows and had the air conditioning up. So, I mean, I think we've learned a lot since then. So that's a slightly special case, that one.
Just before we move on, obviously we're talking a lot about schools, but we're also about to see hundreds of thousands of young adults go to university. And I know they're trying to socially distance Freshers' Week, but I can't see that being that successful. And we have had examples last week in America. The University of Alabama had more than 1,000 cases since classes had begun earlier in August.
Parties at packed bars just off the Tuscaloosa campus apparently spread the virus like wildfire. Video posted on social media shows zero social distancing and barely a mask in sight in the days leading up to the crisis.
How worried should we be about universities?
Frankly, I would be more worried about universities than I am about schools. I think that really could be very, very serious. I mean, university, above any other kind of time of your life, is a time to socialise. And that is the danger that Freshers' Weeks or whatever. But young people are going to come into various university towns, and it won't take very much for an outbreak to spread through them and then into the town. So I can see that as a real problem. I mean, you look at some universities like Cambridge, or it's trying to basically do its education and teaching online. I think that's going to have to be explored a lot more than it seems to be at the moment.
And with all of this, how significant is the area in which the university or the school is based? I know, for example, in Alabama, where they had that big outbreak, it was in an area that had a high prevalence of COVID. Will we need to think about these things in a kind of regional way?
Yes, I think we will. I wouldn't like to sort of pinpoint which areas of Britain are the most likely to be in danger. I think things will change. We'll get outbreaks here and there. I mean, COVID is a disease that is linked to poverty, and students tend to live the most kind of basic lives. They're getting on with other things. I find it very hard to see how it can be controlled there.
Coming up, why governments are taking the risk of reopening schools. Robin, from everything that you've said, it is very clear that young children are much less likely to spread COVID than adults. But clearly, it's early days for the science, and there is a risk when it comes to teenagers. But when the government's thinking about this and thinking about whether to reopen schools, they're balancing all of that out, aren't they? With another risk, the risk of keeping schools closed.
Saw just at the weekend the chief medical officers for England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland saying it is now safe for youngsters to return back to school, and actually there's more harm done to those youngsters by them not being in school. That's why.
Yes, I mean, I think if you keep the schools closed, I think the implications and the dangers are considerable. The lesser of the two is the economic impact of adults not being able to go to work at the moment because they've got children at home. And we do have to get the economy up and running. The second one is more important. I mean, children have got to go to school. They've got to learn. They've got to socialise with their peers. When they're isolated from that, then there's enormous psychological damage. I mean, you know, we are at risk of at least, you know, 1 year's worth of children in this country suffering quite severe restrictions and spoiling their potential. So we do have to get the schools open. I fully accept that. Is it worth the risk? It depends what the risk is. At the moment, on balance, it looks as if it can be done, but we shall see.
Yeah, and I have to say, there's a psychological impact on parents as well of having children home for months on end. I'm sure lots of us are quite relieved that schools are going back, but they are going to feel quite different, aren't they?
It's not going to be the same school experience that there was before COVID. No, kids are going to be kept separate from other classes and kept in bubbles, as it were. There's going to be reduced numbers of field trips. And parents, of course, coming into classrooms, that won't happen. Parents will be staggered drop-off times, parents wearing masks all the time. So it's not going to be the kind of open, fun experience that it was, you know, at the beginning of the year.
And just finally, Robin, can I ask you a question which is almost broader than just going back to schools? Obviously, we've had in 2020 this enormous change to our lifestyles. We had the entire lockdown. The economy stopped, school stopped, university stopped. And we've reached September and it feels as if people have started to understand that COVID just isn't going to go away. And so in order to live, we have to find a way to balance things. And it feels as if that's what's happening here with schools, that it's just not practical any longer to keep children off. So they're now trying to find new ways that society can carry on, even if this disease is still here.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. We're going to have to live with this. A vaccine is a hope rather than a policy. I think we will eventually get these things, but at the moment we're going to have to learn to live with this disease, to keep cases to a minimum. At the same time, I would point out that death rates are dropping, treatments are beginning to be much more effective. So there's positive news there, but at all times we're going to have to live with the fact that for a year or two, this is going to still dominate our lives.
Robin McKee, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Robin McKee, science editor at The Observer. Do look him up at theguardian.com. He's written loads of interesting pieces about different aspects of COVID-19. He also wrote a really interesting article this weekend about the link between environmental destruction and an increasing risk of pandemics. I would recommend reading it. On schools, do follow The Guardian's education editor, Richard Adams, and education correspondent, Sally Wheel. You can hear Sally and headteacher Ollie de Botton on a previous Today in Focus episode back in May about schools preparing for children to return. All of this, along with the A-level scandal, is turning into a deeply political story for the Education Secretary, Gavin Williamson. Do read our Politics Live blog and stories from our Westminster team to keep up to date with that. If you're enjoying Today in Focus, please do press subscribe, rate us, review us, or tweet me anytime at Anushka Rastana. That's it for today. My thanks to Robin McKee. This episode was produced by Mithili Rao. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.